Welcome to the Razor's Ink podcast with your host, Jonathan Farini. In the world of filmmaking, sound design is a world unto its own. Often underappreciated and sometimes overlooked, it takes an incredible set of ears and a director's mind to assemble all the pieces of the audio puzzle, from the dialogue and sound effects to the musical score. So pour yourself a drink, pull up a chair, and hear Jonathan's take on movies, television, and today, an examination of a masterful example of sound design, starring an actor who will be greatly missed. Here's your host, Jonathan Farini.
I'm recording this podcast after receiving news of Gene Hackman and his wife's death. In memorial to Gene, I'll explore his movie, The Conversation, which Gene considered to be his best role, playing Harry Call, a wiretapping expert, and a far cry from his most well-known character, Popeye Doyle, inside the 1971 French Connection. The Conversation was released by Paramount in 1974 when Robert Evans was running production on the lot, with one hit after another. The Conversation was written, directed, and produced by Francis Coppola. Coppola was king of Hollywood, coming off of Godfather 1 in 1972 and Godfather 2 in the works. The Conversation is a film, in my opinion, which was dwarfed by the success of both Godfather movies and remained within the shadows for decades. The Conversation is important because Gene Hackman isn't playing tough guy Popeye Doyle in the 1971 French Connection. Gene's interpretation of Harry Call is minimalist. There's no discussion about Gene being a method actor, but it's obvious to this viewer, Gene knew a tenet of his craft is less is more. Hackman plays Harry Call, who is a quiet, reserved, introspective, private wiretapping industry phenom within the murky world of espionage. He's hired to record and video a couple played by Cindy Williams, who a year earlier appeared in American Graffiti, and actor Frederick Forrest in a busy Union Square of San Francisco. Harry's assistant is John Cassell. With parabolic microphones resembling a sniper's rifle with crosshairs, we're voyeurs to a barely audible conversation between the couple. Forrest would later go on to play Chef in Apocalypse Now, but plays a button-down corporate type inside this film. It's interesting to note Cindy's character spies a homeless man drunk on the bench and pines on about the fact the man had parents, a past, etc., etc. He's the only homeless guy about, and you can't help but say to yourself, my, how things have changed. The storyline is murky, revealed to some degree at the end of the movie, but my purpose isn't to tell you the story, but make some observations. Suffice it to say, it's an age-old storyline, but it's the way Francis unfolds the story which is interesting. Understand sound is an audible but not a visible protagonist in this film. The use of sound as a protagonist is intentional because Francis uses long and medium shots to increase the importance of sound as we attempt to understand this couple, just like Harry.
What about me?
We'll see.
Not if I knew more. You're supposed to tease me. Kids make me gifts, you know.
We're invited into the film to solve Harry's puzzle, which is elusive up to the end of the film. We're overwhelmed with street sounds, conversations, music, and everything which makes Harry's job difficult when he gets back to his warehouse loft, serving as a sound lab to decipher the conversation with high-tech sound equipment. I believe Gene was drawn to playing this lonely techno-wizard who lives alone and decompresses by playing the sax within his sparse, dingy apartment with three deadbolts on the door, an alarm which sounds upon opening the door, and no telephone. Harry is a religious man, racked with guilt about past surveillance jobs, which led to death, and he's a paranoid. Gene actually plays the sax in the film. His only contact with the world is his assistant, John Cassell, who plays Stanley, who gets on his nerves, and a group of sleazy colleagues and a girlfriend of sorts, played by Terry Garr, convincingly, in a single scene who appears to understand Harry and leaves us wanting more of her and Harry together.
Sometimes I even think you're listening to me when I'm talking on the telephone.
What are you talking about?
I don't know. I just feel it. Really, I do.
Wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get up, get up. Why are you singing that?
It's pretty.
Harry's only connection with the outside world is at a trade show of wiretappers and espionage devices, who treat Harry like a rock star of wiretapping. Look for a standout role by actor Alan Garfield, who plays an envious competitor to Harry. Look also for a cameo by Robert Duvall, who plays the director.
You want it to be true.
No, I don't. I just want you to know whatever you need to know. That's all.
Your money's on the table.
Please count your money outside.
Director of what? We don't know. Young Harrison Ford plays Duvall's gatekeeper, Stet.
Here's your money, $15,000 cash, as you asked. And these are our tapes?
I had an arrangement with the director. I was to give those to him, you see, personally.
I understand. But he's not here this afternoon. Matter of fact, he's out of the country, and he asked me to get the tapes from you and give you the money.
I guess I can just wait on this.
Now, look, don't get involved in this, Mr. Cole. Those tapes are dangerous. You heard him. You know what I mean. Someone may get hurt.
Who, 5 years later in 1979, will play Major Lucas inside the lunch meeting on base in Vietnam and utters,
"Pick up Colonel Kurtz's path at Nu Mung Ba. Follow it, learn what you can along the way. When you find the colonel, infiltrate his team by whatever means available, and terminate the colonel's command."
With extreme prejudice.
Watch him play Stet, and ask yourself if you don't see him play the same character in Apocalypse Now. All we know is Harry has been hired by the director to record the couple's conversation and deliver the tapes and camera footage to Duvall playing the director. Harry learns there is to be a meeting inside a hotel room at the then-existing Jack Tar Hotel, now the San Francisco Hilton, where he may find a clue to his assignment. Harry is racked with paranoia. He fears the worst and rents the room next door. He drills a hole behind the toilet and inserts a listening device. He hears a fight, picks the lock to the adjoining room, and finds no evidence of a struggle. It's as if he's inside a bad dream when the toilet overflows with blood. I want you to think about Kubrick's Wave of Blood spilling out of the elevator 6 years later in the 1980 film The Shining. Similar, yes, but a maxim of this podcast is nothing happens in film by accident, and the great Stanley Kubrick may have been impressed by this toilet spilling blood. At the end of the movie, Harry is paid, told to keep quiet about the reason for the surveillance of Cindy and Frederick, which I won't reveal, but told by Stet,
"We know that you know, Mr. Cole. For your own sake, don't get involved any further. We'll be listening to you."
Harry tears his apartment to shreds in search of the listening devices, which he can't find, and will forever remain a dog collar around his throat. Harry falls victim to his own tradecraft. Ironic. He plays his sax amongst the ruins of his apartment, serving as a metaphor of his life in shambles, and those lives ruined by his tradecraft. The conversation deserves much more conversation than it has received outside film schools and cinephiles. It was nominated for Best Picture, Best Original Screenplay, and Best Sound, Walter Murch and Art Rochester. It was placed within the National Film Registry by the Library of Congress in 1995. It's an interesting film because it invites you to listen as much as watch. This is the point of the film. A nice bookend for this film is Brian De Palma's 1981 Blowout, starring John Travolta playing a sound technician, accidentally recording a political assassination. I feel I knew you, Gene. You're a local boy born in San Bernardino, California. You studied acting at the famed Pasadena Playhouse in Pasadena, California, where I was born and raised. I understand your classmates voted you least likely to succeed. All of your detractors and naysayers you encountered along your early career simply hardened your resolve and is an enduring lesson to everybody seeking a career under the lights, in front of, or in back of the camera. I grew up in the 60s and 70s marveling at your work, Gene, because you didn't resemble a leading man. It was cool watching you tear up a dive bar full of drug pushers while filling a mixing glass with drugs, declaring,
"Anybody want a milkshake?"
inside the 1972 French Connection. You were Max Million looking after fragile Francis within 1973's movie Scarecrow. I was so impressed, I recorded a podcast about your portrayal, Scarecrows and Car Washes. I remember you most for these sensitive fringe character roles you coveted. Buck Barrow, flaying around while dying, muttering,
"I believe I lost my shoes, Clyde. I think the dog got them."
Damn, my gut tells me you improvised that line inside the 1967 Bonnie and Clyde. You play Gene Garrison reconciling a fractured relationship with his father, bringing tears to my father's eyes within the 1970 film I Never Sang for My Father.
A program of yours from college, some Glee Club concert.
You always used to ask me to sing When I Grow Too Old to Dream.
Did I? I don't remember your ever singing that. You always seemed to be just finishing when I came into the room. Did you used to sing that for me?
No.
And finally, Harry Cole, the subject of this podcast. Your Oscar for Best Actor for your portrayal of Popeye Doyle within The French Connection and Oscar for Best Supporting Actor within Unforgiven were earned with talent, tenacity, grit, and love for your craft, which seeps through every performance I've enjoyed. You left film on your terms in 2004. I can't imagine the juicy roles coming your way, enticing you out of retirement. Your passing at age 95 reminds me, time gets away from us. It seems like yesterday I was watching your fabulous films of the 60s and 70s, which influenced me to pursue film. Thank you, Gene. Until I see you next time, please leave behind a soft footprint. And class is dismissed.
And as someone who works with music and sound on a daily basis, I certainly have my favorites. Christopher Nolan's Inception, in which Edith Piaf's music is slowed down to the point of being unrecognizable, but provided the haunting theme and became a notable sound effect. A recent movie from 2015, Baby Driver, which I believe is the most masterful marriage of music and action ever put to film. And 2001, A Space Odyssey. Not just for Kubrick's use of music, but the absolute, dead still, deafening silence of space. All that said, given the theme of today's podcast, Jonathan and I both hope that what we'll remember about Gene Hackman is not the circumstances of his and his wife's death, but the life he lived and his contributions to film that we were fortunate enough to witness. You've been listening to the Razor's Ink podcast with Jonathan Farini. Be sure to check out Jonathan's collection of fiction at the Jonathan B. Farini Story Collection at jonathanfarini.com. Also, look for one of Jonathan's short stories, Architecture, Among the stories in Alone with the Stars, a collection of poetry, prose, and artwork published by Scars Publications. Alone with the Stars, now available on Amazon and at scars.tv. Or drop an email to razorsincpodcast@gmail.com.